broadcasting live from the beautiful Sheraton Grand at Wild Horse Pass for Conscious Capitalism 2019. It's time for CEO Exclusive. Now, here's your host, Sweeney Cope.
I'm really delighted in this segment to actually have one of the speakers at the Conscious Capitalism Conference this year. I was so delighted when he signed up for the CEO Exclusive community online, and I've actually heard about you from other folks in the mid-market community. It's Mo Favelbab. Did I say it correct?
You got it.
Forum Resources Network. So I both want you to weigh in on conscious capitalism in general as a movement, why you think it's important for CEOs. We've been talking to our guests about that. But then I also want you to give us a preview of some of the remarks that you made today for those CEOs who couldn't be here. I would love for them to hear a little bit about what you discussed on stage. So talk to us about conscious capitalism. Why is it worth your time to be here? Why do you think this movement is important for busy mid-market CEOs?
In 1988,
Way back.
I worked at General Motors as a co-op, as a student. And the CFO was this amazing guy who took me under his wing like a mentor, like you can't imagine.
The CFO of General Motors?
Of the plant.
Okay.
The Baltimore plant where I worked. And he was so amazing that when I was touting how wonderful he was to some of my coworkers, they said, "You should have seen just 2 years ago what he would do." He stood up on some guy's desk, stood on this guy's desk, and yelled at him. I don't think that would work today. I think we've come a long way, and I think we're still on this journey. There was a day when people were not seen as assets. They were seen as, I don't know, peasants. There was a dictatorial type of leadership where do it my way because I say so.
Yeah, it was based on a feudal model, right? Where you had the king and all the people, servants, working for the king, right? To serve the, or a plantation model, whichever you prefer.
Exactly. And so for as long as I've been involved in this world of connecting people, whether it's peer groups, whether it's executive teams, I've seen a much greater receptiveness to the notion of friends at work, to the notion of vulnerability as a way to connect, to the notion of we're going to treat people like human beings, because if we don't, it's just not going to work. And so for me to be asked to speak at this event, it was an honor, because I think I have something that might be valuable to contribute, but more so, what can I learn? What can I learn? Because this is brand new to me, but I'm absolutely amazed by what I'm hearing, and I think this is the way to go.
So tell us about your book
and
your remarks today.
Yeah. So just a little background. I decided to write this book because in working with these CEO peer groups, I noticed at their best, somebody comes in and says, "I just shared something with you guys that I haven't shared with anybody." Or they come in and say, "You guys are better than my best friends." And initially, when I would hear that,
You mean the CEO peer group?
Yeah.
Is better than my best friend.
That's
or
right.
I've shared stuff with you that I haven't shared with anybody else. Okay, great.
Yeah. And when I first heard that, I took a lot of pride. I'm like, we're doing something good. This is really cool. Gratifying. Amazing. And it still is. But there was one thing that bothered me. And that was, you're supposed to go to this group to be the best version of yourself so you can be better in the real world with your coworkers, with your family, with your friends. Not for these groups to substitute your friends, your family, or your coworkers in terms of real, authentic relationships. So I took apart the DNA of what I thought made these groups work. And mind you, I've been doing this work with these groups since 91, over 2,000 of them. I took the DNA and said, what makes these groups tick? And what of that really works for friendship in real life or at work? So the 7 keys, in no particular order. First one, shared purpose and values. So in a business, you have a shared purpose. You have values. They define the culture. But is every member of your team buying into those values? Is every member of your team focused on that shared purpose? If they're not, you're quickly going to start to have a problem.
What are these 7 things again?
I haven't gotten there yet. Okay. First one, shared purpose and values.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Next one is reliability. It's okay. Can I count on you to do what you're supposed to say? To be there to hold my confidence. Next one, which I think is critical, is vulnerability. We touched on that a second ago. Vulnerability, according to David Bradford, professor, graduate school of business in Stanford, says vulnerability is the currency of relationships. Mm. Without vulnerability, relationships remain superficial.
Mm.
My words are, vulnerability is the glue. Period. So think of any relationship in your life. And if you're not where you want to be with that person, one or both of you is not being vulnerable. And vulnerability is sharing what you don't want to share. It's taking a risk, stepping outside of your comfort zone. If you share something you're comfortable sharing, you're not being vulnerable. Having a little more fun, my next key is mischievous fun. And I knew this one would be controversial, although it hasn't been. But I believe when people really connect as friends, they do things that are fun that they may not do with casual acquaintances, whatever those things are.
Even just good laughter.
Even just good laughter.
Yeah.
Right.
Authentic laughter.
Authentic laughter. And so when you think about the difference between the people that you can do that with and the people that you cannot do that with, that tells you right there how close a friend this person is. Next one is sharing and generosity. And so with your best friends, I don't know about you, with me, we're always fighting for the check. It's an act of love. It's an act of caring. But imagine if your friends are all takers and you're a giver. That's going to start to feel pretty bad pretty quickly. And you'll wonder, are they my friends because they really like me or because I'm always giving? Another of the seven keys is having this sense of belonging. Do I belong to this group? Do I feel like I'm a part of this organization? Do I feel valued as a person here? If I don't feel valued, I'm not fully in. I'm checked in, I'm checked out. I show up, I don't show up. I don't know that I'm really a part of this. And that's an important one. But the list goes on. And the thing is this. Do I care about the relationship enough to look at what I'm doing, what I'm not doing? The most feedback I get is a chapter called Kind Truth. So imagine if I have a problem with you. Some people are conflict avoiders. They'd rather not say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Sweep it under the rug. Hope it's going to go away. And you know it doesn't, right? You start to feel tension with that person. You start to...
Things get weird.
Things get weird.
Things get weird.
Things get weird.
They get real weird.
Yeah. And in those peer groups, you could cut the air with a knife. Like, if something's going on between you and I, you feel it, I feel it, but other people feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And does that impact the dynamic? Of course. And what's worse, and what's a culture killer in companies, is when not only do I keep it to myself, but instead of going to you,
gossip.
I gossip.
Gossip.
Gossip, right? And so instead of just being poisoned, because, you know, what Gandhi says, holding anger towards somebody is drinking poison, hoping the other guy will die. So in this case, instead of just being poisoned myself by holding it in, and I gossip, I'm now poisoning them.
Poisoning the whole well.
The whole well. Never giving you a chance to defend yourself, to change your behavior, to explain what happened, to even be aware that this is going on. It's like your brother not telling you you've got a spaghetti stain on your blouse and spinach hanging out of your teeth before you go out on a big date or job interview.
And then going and telling everybody else, did you see that thing that she had on her blouse? Did
exactly.
You see? Did you see?
It's terrible. Right. It's terrible. It's terrible. So how do we teach people to have those difficult conversations in a kind way?
Please, Lord.
Lord,
that
right?
would change the whole world.
Yeah. So it's okay to say you hurt my feelings. It's not okay to say, and you did it on purpose. You've been pissed off at me for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Wow. So you were talking about these keys and friendship inside companies and the difference that it makes. I would love for you to share that with listeners as well.
Yeah. According to Gallup, if 4 out of 10 people in your company have a friend at work, profitability is up by 14%. So I'm going to just simplify this for everybody. Friendship equals profit. I know this is conscious capitalism, and I know that might sound like a bit of a manipulation, not the intent. The intent is, can we have a better workplace? Can I look forward to going to work? Can I know that when the chips are down, you've got my back? Can I know if I have to go pick up my kid at 4, instead of looking at me and saying, hey, what's wrong with you? You're always leaving early. You say, hey, I got you. I know you're at a tough time right now. I got you. Because we have real friends there.
Mm. So what do we do to train people or to help people nurture these skills and qualities? Because some people don't get this. I mean, certainly didn't get it in their family of origin and, you know, maybe struggling through life. Like, for example, I know the gossip thing is just a way that some people have of managing conflict. And this is how they've always managed conflict. And this is how they're going to manage a conflict at work. This is just how they do it. Yeah. And so what do you do to start to foster some of these skills in the community?
So in the workplace, and generally when I engage with an executive team, we start with a survey and we ask, how do you deal with conflict? Do people talk to you directly? Do you talk to people directly? And I know the data before I go have the meeting with them. And I say, guess what? This is what's happening right now. Are you guys okay with this? And of course they say no. And I say, good, well, how are we going to resolve this? What's the answer? So they say, okay, well, we're going to agree to some communication guidelines. One of them is no gossip. And by the way, that means the responsibility twofold. Me as the gossiper, I'm responsible to not do that. And you as the listener are also responsible not to listen if I'm talking about a third party. And I learned this firsthand when I was running the Entrepreneurs Organization. I had a guy that was a bull in the china shop. He was incredible in terms of getting results, but he treated people horribly. So I always got complaints. And I used to make the mistake of saying, well, let me go talk to him. And I'd get a different story. And I'd go back to the original person and I'd get a different story. And I was the yo-yo. So what I started to do is to say, hold on a second. Have you guys had this conversation directly? Mm-hmm. And if they haven't, I say, okay, are you willing to do that? I don't want to hear anymore. And if they're not willing to do that alone, I say, would you like me to facilitate that conversation? But I'm not going to listen to you spewing about this person who's not here right now. So that's one thing. Another thing I did is I took my team, and this is same stuff I'll do with teams that I work with, but I took my own team on a retreat. We talked about the values. What do we value as a group? What do we value about how we treat each other? One of them was respect. And I don't know if this is legal, but here's what I did back then. I created a 360 evaluation of everybody on the team, and I posted the results. And when this guy that was my bull in the china shop saw that he was on the bottom, he started to change. 10 years after I left, after the relationship was long gone professionally anyway, he sent me a note saying, thank you for holding me accountable to my personality. It was a big part of my professional growth.
Wow. And so as you think about this intersection of the personal relationships and the culture that's created and friendship, what is the biggest challenge that you see that CEOs and companies are facing in terms of creating friendships at work? Because I know for me, it's like I don't necessarily want to be vulnerable with people at work.
Right. So there's two kinds of people out there in this regard. They're the CEOs. And usually when I work with a company, it is because the CEO met me and said, we need to do this. Mm-hmm. It isn't anybody else in the company. So it starts at the top. And if you are familiar with Patrick Lencioni's work, The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, mm-hmm. and he talks about building trust, he says it starts at the top. The CEO has to set the tone. the CEO has to first demonstrate vulnerability before asking his or her people to do so as well. So it starts at the top. And so if the CEO isn't willing, if the CEO is afraid, if the CEO doesn't know what it would be like to have friends with their team members, then guess what? We're not doing it. We're not even getting started in this arena. So it has to be a CEO who's open-minded, who's willing to be vulnerable, who's willing to take a risk. And once that happens, they lean into it, and voila, it's magic. Because here's the thing.
What's the thing?
There may be some things in your life about which you're not willing to share with your coworkers.
There certainly are.
Right? However, there are some things that you can easily share that are still vulnerable for you. I lost my mother. I'm getting a divorce. My sister has cancer. And what happens is, when you sit across from somebody that you've worked with for 5 years and you have not shared this stuff, and people share it for the first time in tears, what happens is connection, authentic connection. And it's comfortable to share. You start to realize, you know what? I'm not alone.
I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to be perfect in order to be loved.
Yes. Yes. And to that point, so my background again is the peer groups, the CEO peer groups. And I am in the same group since 1991. Four of the original seven members are in that group. And about 10 years ago, at the end of our annual retreat, we're making our closing comments. And I found myself in tears as I said, I just realized I have no more secrets with you guys. And why was I in tears? Because it was a moment of, oh my God, they love me as I am, not for who I pretend to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's a really amazing place to get to with people.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So you're saying that this makes a big difference at work,
mm-hmm.
and that I'm assuming you're implicitly encouraging CEOs to cultivate these kinds of friendships, you know, from themselves and with their organization. So how does this intersect with the broader conscious capitalism movement? Mm. And what are your thoughts on having CEOs who may be cynical begin to think this way? What are your thoughts on that?
So the first thing I say to a CEO who's cynical, who tells me that they're cynical about this, is I say, listen, this is not just...
Frou-frou. It's frou-frou.
It's frou-frou. No, I say it's not just about you. It's not just about you. So if you're caught up in whether or not you can be friends with any of your employees, think beyond yourself and ask yourself, what about their relationships with each other? What about them being magnetized to one another? Because it's not just about you. So that's the first thing I say. Second thing I say, and they have a concern of, how do I be a friend with somebody and the next day fire them? And my answer is, well, read my chapter on kind truth, because we're not talking about fake friendships. We're talking about real relationships. And if you're going to be real and you're going to be vulnerable, you also have to be able to kindly, truthfully say when something isn't working. Because if you don't do that, you're not doing this person a favor, only for them to wake up one day and find out you haven't been happy for 5 years and you've kicked them to the curb without giving them a chance to improve or change.
Hmm.
So back to your other question, how does this tie into the conscious capitalism movement? So I believe the conscious capitalism movement is about doing good. And if we are taking care of our people at work, if we're creating a happier workplace and they're healthier, which is another thing that we know, then we're doing good. We're doing good in the world. So how could you not do that?
Great. Well, thank you so much, Mo. I'll give you just an opportunity to give any closing thoughts for our listeners before we wrap up the interview.
Have fun. Life's too short. Be friends with the people you work with. Have fun with them. Get to know them. Before you know it, this person that you were at arm's length away from, who you judged for whatever reason, when you peel a couple of layers back, you're going to find out, you know what? They're not so different than you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your conference.
Thank you so much.